call the regular meeting of the Fountain County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Oh, my goodness. Now we'll adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommended changes or other updates?
There are.
How did I know that was going to happen?
Yeah, if you look, sir, on the, on your agenda you have in front of you, there are two additions under new business.
Okay.
The Sheriff's Office has an SRO grant that has to be in before your next meeting. So we just want to please get your concurrence on it. We can always ratify it the next time. But concurrence, and then the other one is about health insurance, and we'll talk about that after the brief. We tied a motion to that for later on, so those are the two additions
to the
senior package.
Do I have a motion to adopt?
So made.
Second?
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Nichols?
Yes, sir. Chair, members of the board, just a few things to update you on. The field trip for the first and second graders to Pleasant Grove for Earth Day, they do this annually. It worked out really well again this year. The weather was fantastic, and so it made it better than having muddy feet going back to schools afterwards. And the kids had a great time out there. Lots of help from the Master Gardeners, Master Naturalists, and the Virginia Bluebird Society volunteers. And they did a lot of work out there and planted a lot of things and learned a lot too. So
when was that?
A week ago on the 20th, Friday the 20th.
I don't know why I missed that. I missed it.
Because you're not first or second grade, so we didn't send the notification.
I like to go to those. I don't know how. It's your fault. You must
be. It probably is, because I don't think I mentioned it before.
That's probably.
Spencer has mentioned it a few times, but I didn't. So
okay.
Following that, the next morning was a little bit more a little bit more scattered. We had the Earth Day Hazardous Waste and tire collection. Tire collection went off fantastic. It was great. I'll tell you just a little funny story. We don't take business tires, and we don't take people from out of the county now. And so one of the Parks and Rec staff that was asking people if they'd come through, he'd see a big load of tires on a truck, and he'd say, "Oh, great, yeah, what business are you in? Can I get one of your business cards?" When they handed him the business card, he said, "Sorry, we don't take any business tires," and turned them around. So it was great. But there were, honestly, only about a truck and a half full of tires that we collected. But there were, one time I saw a pickup truck overflowing, followed by one of the 8-foot trailers overflowing. And then right behind him, another pickup truck and an 8-foot trailer overflowing. You know they're coming from businesses, but it's hard to weed out everything. But we are getting tires off the back 40.
The only bad part about the overflowing tires is they were truly overflowing because some person came from Ken's store and I could track them. Because one of them was right here at the bottom of the hill below the old stone jail.
Well, fell out in tires, fell off.
Maybe that was Sheriff Fortune coming down there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that would come from Lance Crawford, that'd be his deputy.
Anyway, on the hazardous waste, good news and bad news. We started at 10 o'clock. At about 10:15, they'd already reached $11,000 out of the $13,000 was budgeted. So we knew we were going to be slammed. I actually closed the gates after talking to Mr. Sheridan at right about 10:30, and Aaron and his staff did a great job of corralling all the cars, but there were, 200 or 300 cars out there lined up in the field waiting to get through. It ended up being $18,000 worth rather than $13,000, and I'm very thankful because I told the chair after the weekend I thought it was going to be $30,000 or $40,000 because there were so many cars after that original one happened. These are all locals with IDs and things like that, just cars running paints and solvents and fuel and stuff in. But it also shows you that there's a big demand for this. You don't have a lot of other options in our county because even Vanderlinde doesn't accept paint anymore like they used to. They used to accept it for $1 a can, regardless of the size of the can, latex paints. They don't even accept that anymore. And once in a while you can get away with taking the Ivy landfill and paying down there, but that's supposed to be residents only too in Albemarle County. And this, doing this is much better than the alternative of throwing in a ditch or dumping it in the stream or whatever. Remember, you haven't done it for 2 years, and you only plan on doing the hazardous waste every couple of years, so you might want to think about either making this an annual event or something, but you can't advertise 10 to 2, even though the signs all said, you know, limited capacity available until we run out, you know. But you can't advertise 10 to 2, close off at 10 o'clock, and have people yelling at you for the next 3 hours. But I don't know how well to estimate all this stuff. This was $18,000 for about, Mr. Spencer, 200 cars, 250 cars?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. I mean, there were a load of cars.
Now, the last time we had 22,000, did we budget 2 years ago? Was it more?
That was 18,000 more.
Right, I think it was better 18, than 20.
It was. Okay. And we didn't have that problem, did we?
Well, no, you lasted longer that time. Again, this one only ended up being 18,000. I was really surprised because honestly, what, at 10:15?
At 10:15, he gave me a call and said, we're already at 11,000 and there's twice as many cars still in line. We may be looking at a big number.
Yeah.
So you turned a lot of people away.
Well, after 10:30, yes. And there were a number of people that were just flaming mad, and some people just understood. And somebody said, well, I already loaned my car. I got all this stuff. What am I going to do? I'm afraid they're going to go dump it someplace now. Mm-hmm. But the problem is if you go a full 4 hours, if you're going to advertise that, maybe you make it 10 to 2. But what do you do if it's 10 to 2 and there are 100 cars that are already at 9 o'clock? Because that's what it was Saturday. I get there at 9:20. There were about 40 cars in front of me, and I was going just to help out and stuff. So that was at 9:20. It didn't even open until 10. So it's a need. It's probably important. And you don't need to decide now. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have a full brief for you, show you the alternatives and options, look at some costs. We've actually have a different site that we think will be better than this current one. But Mr. Spitzer will have that on the 16th for you. But let you know that we went over by $5,000. So that would only be a VOS contingency thing, and we'll have to move some money around. But,
clearly, we need to find more money for this.
I think so, because most counties have some type of alternative for people to appropriately dispose of hazardous waste. The sheriff's office does medicines. The tires are relatively easy, and we get some grant money for that. What do you do with hazardous waste if you live in Fluvanna County and you've got 6 gallons of old paint in the garage? Well, you can go buy kitty litter and let it solidify if it's latex and throw it in regular trash. You can put sand in it. But what do you do with, like, I brought two gallon things of gas that I know were 3 years old that were no good because the stuff with ethanol in it goes bad fairly fast, and I'm not going to just dump it on my neighbor's yard unless he really makes me mad. But I took those and I took a bunch of paint things, and you know.
Now we know whose fault it is.
And at the mayors and chairs meeting on last week, that was a discussion from other counties as well. So,
if tires especially. It's got a couple of places where they got 1,000 or 2,000 tires stacked up on private property. Well, that's mosquito breeding ground and the fire problems. The fire can go on for months with a big tire fire, and so it's probably good to do this, but I'll probably make a recommendation next year's budget to do it next year, too. Make a recommendation sometime this year to do it next spring as well. But you may want to think about, do you want to do this thing, you know, twice a year and do it at the landfill or something, you know, so they take it right there instead of there. We also talked to the superintendent briefly, doing it in the high school parking lot, out behind the high school, where you could run cars through logically through a lawn. When they first come in, where the traffic circle is, that's where you check the IDs. If they're not from us, you turn them around, check the circle, and go right back out. When they get done dumping in the back to the trucks and stuff, then they go out the bus exit out the other side. So you've got one-way traffic. As long as they don't have an event that weekend at the same time, and we can schedule when we need to, then it would probably work out pretty well. The trucks that this company used, Veolia is the company we used this time. Their trucks were sitting on a 12 or 15 degree grade sideways just because that's the way the land is sloped to Pleasant Grove. But remember, on a Saturday morning, especially a sunny Saturday morning like last Saturday, what you've got is hundreds, literally hundreds of cars going to the ball fields back there. and mixed in with the people going to tires, and mixed in with the people going to hazardous waste, and mixed in with the hikers. It's just a bad place to have it all mixed on a Saturday morning. So I'd rather move it someplace else, but you might want to think about doing it twice a year for, you know, a 2-hour time period. People line up an hour and a half in advance. But that's the news from this last one. Park Rec staff did a fantastic job. Public Works staff did a fantastic job. But there were some not so happy people when we closed at 10:30 for an event we advertised with limited capacity. But you know, if you're my age and you've loaded up all the stuff out of your house that you've had here for the last 10 years, put it in your car with your wife and drive it all over there, the last thing you want to do is have to carry it all back down to the basement again and put it all away.
Well, that's like some of those folks last year brought tractor tires and got upset with us.
Yes, and this year, there were tires with rims on them still, too. People advertised no tractor tires, no tires with rims, but you know, we turned those folks away, and no business tires, but tires have not been the big problem. It's been hazardous waste. That's the most damaging to the environment. All the tires can be a big problem, too. So that's the story. We'll come back with you tomorrow on the 16th, and you can decide how you want us to go in the future. Meals on Wheels is having their 10th anniversary this year, and they've got their annual recognition dinner on Saturday, and they're our spotlight on business for this month as well. And they do a great job in our community. They have 180 volunteers. They feed about 80 different people every day. They take meals out Monday through Friday, and every couple weeks they drop off non-perishables for weekend supplies for families. And the local churches and local citizens all volunteer and support this, but great organization that really makes a positive difference in our community. And starting from serving 8 or 9 people to up to near 100 now, and obviously there's a need. And most of those near 100 get the food free. Some, because of income limits, have to pay a little bit, but they do a really good job. I also like to give a shout out to the Dogwood Restaurant, because they're the ones that actually prepare the meals now instead of Java like before. And they do a great job, and then the volunteers all pack it at Effort Baptist Church and put it all together to get it out. So, great program.
And you said this Saturday there's an event for the...
Yeah, their annual, they sent out invites for that. The annual invites for that are out. It's their annual volunteer recognition dinner at noon at Effort on Saturday.
And you have to...
Yeah, you have to
RSVP.
Brenda and I are going, we'll take the certificate of this too, so that they're aware. And then the Zion Crossroads Water Project, the certificate to construct has been approved by DEQ for both the water and sewer system and the water booster pump station, the wastewater pump station project. Mr. Stevens got those in a week or so ago, and so that's great.
That was
kind of the final permitting process on the ZXR one. We'll give you some other information later tonight, but the final design is completed. The invitation for bid should be on the street by the end of next week, and then that'll be a 75-day time frame. Once those come back in, we'll take a couple supervisors and staff to review those bids. Remember, this is an invitation for bid, not a qualitative look at, you know, all the nuances of it. It's essentially, you're going to take the lowest responsive bidder out of these, if we have a responsive bidder, and that'll be later this summer. But the staff and the county attorney are working on the property interests and easements and things that have to go on with that. And I'll show you some other information in your closed session tonight about that project. And let's see. I don't know what that was there for. And then the Remo Power Plant, just an update from Dominion. You know, remember they were shutting that down to cold storage. They made offers to 100% of the employees there. All but two accepted the offers of either transfer, work there, or early retirement. And only two declined the offer, so that's good news for the employees that were there. And they still have six to ten employees on site at the plant. And so I met with Dominion last week about this. Dominion also is working on a project that they've been tasked with, not just Dominion, but other utility companies. The state legislature wants them to submit a report and a report by December 31st. It essentially addresses three questions. How they can make improvements to the distribution grid to further broadband internet services. How they can operate a broadband internet service using their utility distribution and transmission infrastructure. Or how they can permit other commercial entities to lease such capacity on their So it won't come of anything right now, but it's a report back to the legislature, and we want the legislature looking at ways to get up the CBEC project. CBEC project now wouldn't go in the Dominion area normally, but this may eventually allow where a private provider or another provider could use power poles in an area they don't serve with electricity to do broadband in that area as well. So that Dominion's working on that as well as other power providers in the Commonwealth. And I'll be out of office next week, and Eric will be covering. I'll be in Charleston for the week, and Mr. Dahl will be covering. Any questions I can answer? Oh, one reminder. I sent you this by email earlier this week, but because you've got a full agenda now and a full closed session, the evaluation part that you're going to do tonight, I would recommend you do it at 6 o'clock before your 7 o'clock meeting on the 16th. So come in, we'll get the second calendar. Come in at 6 o'clock, do that while you're having dinner, and then go to your regular 7 o'clock meeting. Otherwise, you're going to be extended tonight. And so when you finish tonight, you will recess to date certain in time, 6 o'clock on the 16th, rather than adjourning. And then your 3 can mean then go into closed session immediately, come out of closed session, adjourn, and then call and order the new meeting at 7 o'clock. And then you've just got your regular meetings in June following that. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Anyone?
No.
Thank you very much. All right. We will now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Mr. Hazel, come on up. I know this will be a very difficult situation sitting there at that chair.
Never been in this particular one. Thank you. I'm Jeff Hazel, Palmyra, and I'm here from Blue Banner Meals on Wheels. And thank you very much, Mr. Nichols, for laying the groundwork. But I wanted to come personally invite you all to come to our 10th anniversary and volunteer recognition luncheon Saturday the 5th at 12. I know it's Old Farm Day, and we'll do a little better scheduling next year. But if you can come by on your way or on your way home, it's going to be a couple hours probably of us getting together. And you'll see some of the best folks in this county. They really make this happen. We've got about 198 volunteers on the list now, and that list is updated regularly, so that's pretty accurate. And we're serving this week 77 people, hot meals 5 days a week. We have served 127,035 meals in the 10 years we've been serving. And this all started back in 2007. Will and Marion Blackford and Don Morton were working for Albemarle Meals on Wheels, and they were so frustrated they get to Scottsville and have to stop delivering and then just go on home, and they knew they were driving by a lot of people that needed food. So they had the idea, and I was blessed to be one of the ones they reached out to be on the original board. And we got our first meeting May 7th, 2007, and delivered our first meals to about 8 people in February of 2008. So we're very, very proud to have been here 10 years. But please come by if you can. RSVP, you've got your, but if you don't RSVP, we'll still feed you. That's what we do. come on by and see us. Just thank you so much. And Steve, thank you for your update.
Thank you, Mr. Hazel. Is there anyone else wishing to address the board at this time? Mr. Pace might give extra credit if one of the students were to come up here and speak. Okay, no takers. I will now close this first round of public comment. Alrighty, public hearings, we have none. We will now go to action matters. M, Columbia Property Donation, Mr. Nichols.
Sure, so Mr. Chair, members of the board, there are 7 properties originally in the grant-funded properties we were going to purchase in Columbia. Remember, 7 of those had part 4 structures on them total. You have already purchased through the grant with TJPDC through that process. You've already purchased 6 of the parcels and the 4 structures. But there was a 7th parcel that just was difficult to get because the woman who owned it was elderly. We could not find clear title because we thought there was multiple interests in it from different family members. And so now what has happened since the last time I briefed you on it is Mrs. Shea, who owned this, lived in the Virginia Beach area, just passed away in December. She was in her early 90s. She passed away. Her son contacted TJPDC, Ms. Billy Campbell, who was actually here tonight for another agenda item, and talked with Mr. Payne, our county attorney. You can, they want to donate that parcel in Columbia. Now, the problem with the donation is that you still don't have full and clear title, but it probably is okay to move forward with taking that now, and we'll figure out the remainder later. There is a lien on the property because it had some back taxes. The total is about $1,000 in back taxes and penalties. I think for forgiving that and taking interest in the property, because it gives us that contiguous parcel down there, would be in good shape. So, Mr. Payne, would you think?
One thing that came up during the acquisition process for these other parcels was we thought at one time that this property had part of a building on it, and it turned out it didn't when we got a survey. So it wasn't urgent to buy it. The problem is it has, I won't get into the details of it, but Mrs. Shea, who had property titled to her for all these years, owned an interest in it because it came from her family, but it was less than 100%. And exactly what it was is a matter of some controversy. It was probably a third because it came from her grandfather. So we simply couldn't get good title to it and therefore couldn't satisfy the terms of the grant to buy it. We didn't really need it to get rid of the buildings. If we accept this donation, we will be able to use it for things, for the limited things we could use it for, like access to the other properties and things like that. We can't put buildings or anything on it anyway because it's in floodplain. So if any of the other possible co-owners ever comes up and wants to have a discussion about buying them out, we can always buy them out. I wouldn't pay much for it because it's probably not worth very much. Waiving the tax claim was something that I recommended because the biggest issue with that now is for Mrs. Shea's son, who's the executor of the estate, it's a problem with liquidating the estate, the claim against the estate, to settle the estate. So if we go ahead and waive that amount, it'll help him. It won't cost us anything. Collecting this is, it's more trouble than it's worth, which is why it hasn't gone to auction before this.
And this is the parcel right there, the little small square one in the middle. So we own this one and this one, those two parcels, but we don't own that little piece in the center, and that's what we'd be acquiring.
And if you notice, one thing shown on that sketch is that there's a driveway that goes across it. So it would be useful to have that.
Yeah, and we'll retain that, but the property owners that use that now will not. They'll be putting in a new driveway down next to, adjacent to their property. They'll be putting it on here. This is the parcel we did not end up acquiring because there's a house right here, and so they'll be putting a driveway right in there into that house. So that's the story with this.
Alrighty. Alrighty, are there any questions from the board? Okay, do we have a motion?
I move that the Board of Supervisors accept the donation of an interest in tax map parcel 54A, 162A, sometimes known as the Rock House parcel, from the estate of the late Catherine Cabell Morris Show, and to exonerate and release all claims for real estate taxes related to said parcel.
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now move forward to action matter MC, update procurement policies and procedures manual. Ms. Tolan? Long time no see.
Yeah, right. So we had to do a slight update of our procurement policies for our design build procedures. Okay, I'm not turning anything here.
Left mouse.
Yeah, I'll hit both of them.
Okay,
yeah. Yep, start off. There we go. Okay, the county's current design build procedures, they are Chapter 7 of the Procurement Policies and Procedures Manual. They require updating because the Virginia code has changed, and Most of the changes are just in reference. They moved in the state code, moved where it's at, so the references have changed. The majority of the actual wording has not. There are two significant changes in the wording, and everything else is just code reference that's changed. The one point is they took out the approval for exceptions to the procedure can be granted by the purchasing agent. That's been removed. And the second thing is that they've made the separately sealed cost proposals. Instead of being turned into the Virginia Construction Contracting Officer, it's now the purchasing agent. Those are the only two major changes. Those are the only things we've changed in our code other than the references to the Virginia code. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Tolga. I love those. Yes, 1 minute. All right. Any discussion from the board? Do we have a motion?
I move for the Board of Supervisors to adopt the revised Flavanna County Design Build D/B procedure, being a part of the procurement policies and procedures manual, effective May 2nd, 2018.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. N. Burn Building Design Build Project. Ms. Toler.
The necessity of changing that policy is for this. We have put out a RFP for the design services for our burn building facility. We received no responses back. The only people who remotely seemed interested decided not to participate because they didn't want there to be a conflict of interest with them designing and also wanting to bid on the construction. So they were holding out for the construction IFB so they could bid on that. After talking to Teresa Hunter from Fire Programs and the committee who's working on this, we've decided that the best option would be to move forward with a design build solicitation. That way we have the same people doing the design as well as doing the construction. It's all done in one process and we don't have anybody worried about conflicts of interest. The building, these are the determining factors which in our procedures we're required to put forth and make clear. The determining factors are the building design is based on a prototype developed by the Commonwealth of Virginia Department of Fire Programs and is therefore reasonably simple and straightforward. The design includes integral equipment which is available as pre-engineered components, pre-manufactured burn room components such as a kitchen or a bedroom. The site development involves no unusual or complicated processes which may require specialized design. And there are firms which specialize in the design and construction of these burn buildings as a complete or turnkey process which can be expected to allow overall cost and time savings for the project. According to our procurement policies, we are required to put in writing from the board that this is the route we've decided to go. So that'll be something that'll have to be signed off on. Any questions?
Anyone?
And the county engineers also put a certification on the design bills appropriate for this project, too.
Yes.
And through the county attorney's office as well.
All righty.
Did we determine how much it's going to be on this per se, the exact figure on that?
No.
And we haven't even.
Not until we get a bid.
Yeah.
Right. We don't have any estimate or anything.
Because we didn't get a design, so we don't know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So when the design build comes in, they'll tell us what their proposal is for design and the construction. And then we'll make a decision based on that. But we don't have a clue yet. I mean, we know what some other ones have cost, but we don't know what ours is going to be.
And what about the money?
Well, you have $480,000, of which you can only use some of that for some of these things. Some things have to be paid for by other sources of money. Some, like the land clearing and preparation, you've already done that. The tree cutting, and you've actually had revenue from that. The Fire Rescue Association has an ongoing buy a brick program. Brennan and I bought our brick yesterday off their website, and so they're trying to raise funds for that to contribute to the ancillaries and the extra things for that burn building on design and construction. And we hope that they can raise a fair amount. We've also got commitments from different contractors and businesses in the county to participate in that, whether it's materials in kind or in labor or in heavy equipment use to, you know, to do certain things. But the most recent one built that we know about, the Farmville one, ended up being about $700,000 start to finish with the grant money, the money they did for clearing the land, putting in the parking lots, those kind of things, and the fundraising and things they did. I don't know if ours will be in that neighborhood, or if it'll be less, or if it won't. But we'll see when we get the design build bids back from contractors.
Thank you.
Again, you don't have to go forward until you decide to go forward. The grant can be declined and move on. If the bids come back at, you know, $2 million, I'm pretty sure we're not going to be wanting to build a building for $2 million when we only have $400,000 in grant money.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think it'll be that. I think it'll be more reasonable. But the construction costs are absolutely going up now.
Sure.
So, all righty. Thank you very much. All right. Do we have a motion?
I move to determine that for the reasons set forth in the attached written determination for the construction of a new public safety training facility, a design-build contract is more advantageous than a competitive seal-build construction contract. Second, there is a benefit to the county by using a design-built contract and competitive sealed bidding is not practical or fiscally advantageous, and to authorize the chairman to sign the attached written determination.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye, although I almost voted nay, just so because, you know, it calls me out in that. Just like to be difficult. Formal adoption of Regional Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan 2017 update. Ms. Debbie Smith.
Evening.
Yes, ma'am.
This is basically something that was done prior to me taking the position. So I do have Ms. Campbell is here from the Thomas Jefferson Planning Commission who worked on it, and she can answer much better questions than I could.
All right.
I'll let you come have a seat.
Yes, ma'am.
Talk to them.
Good afternoon. Thank you for considering the plan today. This is a required document through the Mitigation Act of 2000. This is the third iteration of the regional plan. First plan was developed in 2005, and then the five-year update was adopted in 2012. That plan included the demolition work in the town of Columbia, the former town of Columbia, and so the funding for that grant is one of the funding streams for which having this plan makes the county eligible. So being a part of a regional plan makes the county eligible for certain funding streams through FEMA and through the Virginia Department of Emergency Management. The planning district did most of the technical work. We've given you a plan that's got some posters showing the data analysis. In the actual plan, that's about 200 pages. So we thought we'd spare you that. But the heart of the plan is really the mitigation actions. So we worked directly with locality staff. We met with your local emergency planning committee to develop that list. So Cheryl Elliott did pretty much all of the work to define the actions, which is really the heart of the plan. So in the summary plan that you have a summary listing of those actions and then a little more detailed information about each of those actions, including timeline, responsibility, and estimated cost. So this has been through the Virginia Department of Emergency Management. We submitted to them in August, received some comments. They passed it on to FEMA in December. And FEMA has now approved that pending the adoption by the localities. So you have a resolution before you, and we're asking that you adopt that formal resolution of adoption so that this plan includes Susanna County. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions from the board?
I noticed that the projects, that some of them are funded and some of them are not.
Is that a... Yeah, I think most of the, I don't know that, we put everything in the plan that would contribute to the county being more prepared in advance for a disaster that would happen. And so part of the reason to put things in the plan that are already funded or already in progress is that when we have our annual meeting, we can show that we're making progress on the plan. So not all of these are new things. Some are ongoing things, and some are things that are already in motion. But we want to capture all of that to show the entire body of work that the county is doing to prepare for hazards.
And one of the things for $250,000 is to put house numbers up. Most of our houses have numbers. Are these all to be replaced?
I don't think they all need to be replaced, but I suspect that seems like a pretty high number for that work.
That's just a wedge placeholder number. So what this is, I think before you got on the board, Mrs. Eager, what the FRA and the Emergency Management Coordinator and county staff and the Sheriff's Office have been talking about for several years is converting over from the very small green signs that face the road that are useless in rural areas because of the grass growing up and they get knocked down by snow plows and all the stuff, and replacing with the Buckingham style one signs for the facilities where it's a sign that goes straight up and down but it has numbers vertically and faces both ways. They're the blue ones that Buckingham County has. Much easier to see for fire, rescue, and police on rural areas. In an area like in my neighborhood, in Nahor Village, there's not much problem there because all the houses have house numbers and you can see the house because it's only 10 feet off the road. But for rural areas of our county especially, and even Lake Monticello, they have a lot of hard time seeing the little green signs. So they're talking about, over some time, converting those maybe for new construction, for rural areas, and then, but we just don't even have a proposal to you all yet on what the costing is or put a wedge in the budget. That'll be coming up in your budget year. But it's been a long discussion back and forth with the Neon One Center. In addition, the cost of what the signs are now for replacement signs, we don't even collect enough to pay for the cost of the replacement sign if somebody wants a replacement sign. And so all those policies and dollars related to that will be coming to the board for a decision once we get some consensus out of all the players. Okay. That's why that wedge is there. That's probably way over estimated cost, but it at least has a wedge there.
Yeah, I just did $27.75 per house.
Well, I think we charge $35 now for one of the green signs. It's 45, but that's for the contractor to go out and put that bank new sign and go out and put it in place.
So the sign is staying for the contractor, right. Put it in, and you do check for
right. If you just give them out to homeowners, then they'll be in a different place at every different house, and we have to follow a certain pattern, but I don't think that even covers our costs. And so we've been working with the E911 office who doles those out. That's where the requests come in through. They're originally assigned, the numbers are originally assigned by the building inspections department, but it's more expensive than $27 per. Now again, we're not saying that we would recommend replacing everybody's sign at one time in the county. But if you live in a rural area and you're a quarter mile off the road, if it were me, I'd kind of like to have the fire department know where I'm at. And therefore, we either got to really have a really good mailbox with the sign out there or one of these new blue signs you can see even when the grass grows up and stuff. And the fire and rescue insurance is on that too. So anyway, there's a thousand nuances to this. Because if you go down that quarter mile driveway, it's a private drive. What if there's three houses back there? Do you also put a blue sign in front of each of the three houses? Lots of details can be worked out, but the current system of about 3x10, they're about twice that long.
I will say it's very difficult to try and see them when you're driving down the road.
They're terrible. Unless you're in a neighborhood, I think my subdivision may be the only one with curbs and sidewalks, and the houses are right up on the road, so it's easy there because you have to have house numbers. Most of the area of our county is not like that at all.
Okay. So. Having actions in the mitigation plan does not create any requirement for you to actually carry them out. So it's a planning document. We do want to show some progress toward the plan. There are some things in the plan that would be eligible for federal funding, but we really want to capture the whole universe of ideas and things that may be carried out over the next 5 years.
Yeah,
Yeah, this has to be adopted, this resolution, in order for us to be able to be eligible for grants, correct?
Yes.
Any others? Booker?
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Do I have a motion?
I move that the Kluvana County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Resolution Kluvana County Adoption of the Regional Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next, P, the Farm Heritage Museum Amendment 2. Ms. Tolan, back again.
Back again. So we are moving right along with the Farm Heritage Museum. As you can see, it's coming right along. It's starting to look really good. Builder has great expectations for it to be a real showpiece. As part of that, the contractor has offered to have us finish the insides of the walls. He's offered to cover the interior walls with T111 plywood. That adds $7,000 to the cost of the build. However, the contractor, this was supposed to cost about $7,600. The contractor, the labor was supposed to cost $7,600. The contractor has offered to donate the materials if we pay for the labor. And he also has brought the labor cost down to $7,000 for us, which is a great deal for the size of this building. The interior walls are covered will make the museum look nicer. It'll also make the custodial work easier. Not less dusting between the nooks and crannies and just overall make it a better appearance. Currently, the cost would be covered under the contingency funds that have already been budgeted for the project. However, the Historic Society has indicated they will add this to the amount that they will pay us back in future donations.
Is that like on a yearly basis they're going to pay us back?
Mm-hmm. We're going to give you a big chart that shows the $54,000 plus this that shows what your funding stream was from the very beginning, the $15,000 you put in, and what the county's done, various things, and what they owe us back, and where we think the money's going to come from, like the annual contribution that we won't be making, and then we'll get from them what they think the funding stream is going to be. But there is no absolute, it's $1,000 a year for the next 7 years.
Right.
That they've already committed, they're going to pay the money back over the coming years. But we'll have a master chart for you that shows that list. And you'll see that periodically so you'll know where the balance is so it doesn't get lost in the fray.
Kind of like the ball fill over Carroll's Brook, $5,000 a year.
Exactly. You'll have a chart.
We might not even be around by the time.
No, but it'll continue to be going through in your budget process every year because that document will be part of your budget process and we'll see what numbers are coming back in because it starts with the 25 and any payments we get off that we'll be deducting off. Just like we track for the FSD loans, we track all that and track it. So you'll have documents for all three of these.
I'm making sure I document that in my will, sir, so we don't forget.
This is a basic layout of the funding that's gone on so far and adding the $7,000. You'll see the total budget is not changing, and it still leaves us with just over $8,000 left in the contingency funding.
I'm wondering, though, if that's contingency, why did you need to come to us?
Because it is an addition to the plans. In a contract this size, with this $7,000 difference, we wanted to bring it to you to make sure you knew about it and make sure you approve
it. I'll tell you, the most frequent question that I get asked by my county public works director is why do we have to take this to the board? And it's because if we didn't take this to the board, these kinds of things, mm-hmm. one of you didn't like
come
it,
up.
I'd hear about it.
Yeah.
And so the pattern has always, been when we change these kinds of things, even though it's really just a rudimentary, you're just rubber stamping it as long as you agree.
Well, it is new, too. It's
something different. So it doesn't cause us very much extra work. But frankly, most things that are, like on the water project, if we've got to come back in saying that on the water design process, water project, originally the line went through a smidge of Louisa because that's the way the easements were going. The engineers found a way to move it back into our county. I didn't come ask for approval to do that. I didn't think you really care, and I'm not going to come ask for approval for that. But it didn't cost us any more money, but it's a change from the original alignment because it's moving 50 feet or 20 feet.
Why would we care that?
Well,
alignment.
I don't think you necessarily do, except that there are many times that county administrators and staff get bit because someone didn't know something. So we're an abundance of caution, we want to show you. And if it's that easy, you just say, good, you go.
The answer to the question is, you are the governing body of the county, and if there's any doubt about whether you should hear this or not, my recommendation is always bring it to the board. You can't go wrong.
Better safe than sorry.
Mm-hmm. Bingo.
Yes, and I don't agree with that much sometimes because I think it's just rudimentary day-to-day work, but that's why we do bring it, because we threw in a bunch of caution. I'd rather have you see it, approve it, it's on the record, the public's seen it, done. Doesn't cause much work.
All right. Are there any other questions?
No.
Mr. O'Brien?
Nope.
All right. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve Amendment Number 2 between Brevana County and Blue Dinner Build, Inc. for the purpose of increasing the scope of work to include covering the interior walls, increasing the total contract by $7,000, and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to County Attorney provisions for a proper agreement and approval.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We will now move forward with presentations. Q, Political District Road Index. Ms. Joyce Pace, the Registrar. Didn't see you back.
Excuse me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
I'm here to bring to your attention the issue of misassigned voters in Fluvanna County. And when I say misassigned, it's because these voters are registered in Fluvanna, but they are actually residents of Louisa County according to the 2010 census data. All right. So historically, voters have been assigned to a locality where their dwelling is taxed. That decision was based on the definition in the Code of Virginia under 24.2-101. Recently, the Virginia Department of Elections ran an overlay of the census block data to the registered voter data. And in this process, they identified 15 addresses in Fluvanna that were possibly in the wrong congressional district. This is affecting about 24 voters. We have contracted with professional services from Hurt and Profit to determine the street file segments needed to employ these changes. This project is broken into two tasks. Task one is comprised of researching the addresses listed in the analysis from ELECT and preparing a political road index file. That will cost $800. Task two, if directed to, will supply a full political road index book for the entire county, and that will cost an additional $3,200, which is not budgeted for. As a result of this discovery, my office will be making the corrective changes to the voter registration and election system and mail out notices to the individuals affected. Are there any questions?
Remember the properties along the Zion Crossroads, mm-hmm. Louisa County border?
Yeah.
It's the same on the
Zion Road.
Border. Yeah. It's a little bit on the Albemarle border, nothing on the south side because the river's there, but this is going to be a problem for obviously for voting, and you're going to have some citizens that have been paying taxes in our county, going to schools in our county for decades maybe, that now are all of a sudden going to be shifted to another district, and then somebody's going to have to figure out, okay, where do you pay taxes? Someone's going to be upset because if they live in, if their house is in Louisa, even though a parcel is taxed here, because historically that's the way it's been, because they were always tied to this church or this school, the two commissioners of the revenue between whichever county we're working with, we'll have to decide that, and maybe subdivide the partial so you pay taxes on this piece here and this piece here, but the county boundaries aren't going to change. It just may be the partial where you're taxed. But this concerns me only because of the few people that will end up for some time until it's decided being taxed one place and voting someplace else. So you set the tax rate for here, but they can't vote on it even though they pay taxes here. Those will get resolved in the coming months, but Ms. Pace needs it right now because the registration for absentee ballots on the last Friday.
We already started absentee voting, so we don't want any of those.
And Fredericksburg area, Stafford area had this problem during congressional lines. There was 140 some people they say voted in the because of these partials that straddle generally, it's where the House is that counts for voting. But we even had one, Mr. Sheridan, the commissioner, talked about that was all on the Goochland line, where the county line went through the House. And they decided that, well, where the bedroom was is where they decided for voting purposes, and that family wasn't very happy about that. But there's 24 identified so far, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were more, maybe there's not, but that's the issue, and I wanted to make sure you heard about it. Ms. Pace needs to go forward with this quickly, has the money for the 800. If you want that other one done, we'll put it on your May 16th agenda for ratification for her to be able to go forward with that. And you can make a recommendation on whether you think it's needed or what your electoral board says.
Well, the commissioner of the State Board of Elections, or elect, has recommended that we do it. It would encompass everything within the county as well, so we'd know whether our lines are correct.
Mm-hmm. So the book is for everybody in the county will be looking at that book.
Right, for the 3,200, the additional 3,200. Otherwise, it's just going to pertain to the addresses that elect had discovered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why do we need this book?
So we can determine what the segment, what the lines are, the road index lines, which tell us which side of the street someone is in, if they're in Rivanna versus Palmyra. It kind of just details how the segments are put into the computer.
The problem with this is that if you get a person who, let's say, lives on a piece of land that's taxed in Fluvanna, but his residence is actually located in Louisa, he shouldn't be voting in Fluvanna County. Or the other way around, and in that case, he doesn't get to vote at all, because he doesn't get to vote for the person that he thought he was voting for. So it really is something that needs to be cleared up. Conceptually, it's very simple. In practice, it's kind of thorny.
And the entire Fluvanna is in the 5th Congressional District, but the 7th Congressional District is on the Louisa side of our border. The problem is we've got those houses that straddle, so for congressional elections especially, you know, it's the county line. Well, but the partial may be called our partial for historically, and they pay taxes here, but the house may be physically in their county or vice versa.
And so if they have children in school, how do they make the decision? Kids go to school where you pay taxes.
The children in school can go either. An easier way to solve, because you can always work that out. Mm-hmm. One way or the other. Worse, you have to pay tuition, but mm-hmm. you can work it out one way or the other. Same thing is true of taxes. The commissioners routinely come to agreement of where the taxes are going to be paid. But for other things, voting being the most obvious one here, and I guess at least in theory, it's the most important. But it also applies in other contexts too. So, for example, if a crime is committed on your property, what's the venue for trial? You try that in Louisa, you try it in Fluvanna. And the one thing that we have had come up is zoning and land use applications. So we have had properties that were located in Fluvanna and Louisa. In one case I know of, there was a subdivision of this property. The access road came in from the Louisa side. It was approved under Louisa's ordinances. But part of the property was, not a lot of it, but it was probably 15 or 20% of the property was actually located in Fluvanna. And those lots are affirmatively unlawful. They don't comply with the Fluvanna zoning ordinance, and they're not approved under the Fluvanna subdivision ordinance. So, you can make some of these adjustments for some of these purposes, but for others you don't. And
so what do you do in a case like that then?
Well, that's the landowner's
call problem. Lawyer.
Mm-hmm. It's the landowner's problem.
I mean, I can tell you one piece of property right now in our northeast corner that the back of it's in Louisa. Everything on the north side of the road's in Goochland, and on the east side is in Goochland, and then the south end of it is in Fluvanna. It's in all three counties, but it's right on the corner.
Well, I think there's a lot of instances, even in Scottsville.
Right,
in
Scottsville especially.
Same way. Yeah. They go right to the house.
Well, of course, Scottsville has the added complication of the town.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah.
So the real question is Mrs. Eager affected? because that could change everything.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of that behind is him.
No, it'll be me. It's between Babia or the Green Springs. They're either in Green Springs or they voted Columbia.
I assumed it was her. Well,
no, it's everything north of 250.
Constituents. I mean, what's going on?
I don't know. But yeah.
And you can exclude those next time you decide to run.
Yeah, that's so two-thirds of the county.
So the $3,200 is to do it.
Do a thorough.
So we don't have to do one little chunk, just do it all.
And right. I mean, yeah. The 800 is for a very small chunk.
Is the 3,200?
No.
Yeah.
It's 4,000.
So I think we're
going 32 additional.
Yeah.
It's something that we want to consider with the next census as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other comments?
Wait until the next census or get it done?
No, I'm saying something. I didn't ask if that's something that they could continue to do included in this cost, because if the lines are redrawn for the next census,
then we have the same issue.
We'll have to look at doing this again.
That's right.
So should we wait until
the... Do a piece by piece as it comes up now?
You should not wait.
Don't wait.
We should go ahead and do it.
You have people that are potentially disenfranchised. Mm-hmm. And you don't want that to happen.
No.
So if you concur, we just need to head down. I'll put it for ratification on your May 16th meeting for the 3,200, so that Ms. Pace can work with Ms. Toller and just get that document done and contract with that service. But we'll then put it on for a BOS contingency funding at your next meeting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mr. O'Brien?
I'm good with that.
Mr. Weaver?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
All righty, R, construction waste containment. Mr. Newman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
There is no language in our county code in requiring that debris on a construction site be contained or that there be toilet facilities on a construction site. So this leads to cases where somebody's building on a house and say there's a storm, the debris and stuff that's not contained can get knocked over onto a neighbor's yard. Furthermore, if there's no toilet facilities on site, our code compliance officer has had reports of workers going to defecate in the woods and other unsanitary places. We have language from Louisa County Code that we've looked at that would require that all litter from a construction site be contained. This is just some draft language that we could use.
Don't most of them dump these great big containers and at these construction sites?
Some of them have the larger bins. Yes. Other ones don't have any bins at all. Our code compliance officer has received a lot of complaints of that.
Or they overflow and just...
And they don't care and it just spills over.
And they're picking it up twice. I mean, why not just put it in the container when you're finished?
Get it one time.
Right.
And if there's a fan on the site.
It's going to happen. We have other language from Mr. Payne's office for having the addition that the owner of a property, which is having any construction performed on it, must provide toilet facilities for workers on the site.
Is this new construction? Like, for instance, if I'm doing a renovation in my kitchen's being remodeled.
You would defer to Mr. Payne?
This is designed so that you don't have to have porta-potties. You can do it by various ways to do it. So, for example, if you're building three houses at the same time, one of them, the facilities were finished, the guys could, when they were working on the other two, could come and use that one. Or you could use, if you had a store next day, they had public facilities, or a porta-potty, or anything like that. You're renovating your kitchen, then you use your bathroom.
Sure.
All those are contemplated by this language, but you've got to demonstrate that you've solved it one way or the other.
Mr. Zoll, our building officials here, if you have any questions for him on enforcement or asking you to.
And I understand the health department is aware of this and they're okay with this language.
They support this. Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Newell.
So do you want us to come back with?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
All righty, we will go S, Social Services Focus Group Report. Ms. Mabe? Good afternoon, dear.
I have handouts for you.
I dig into it.
So I am presenting about a focus groups report that we had done at Social Services last year. A couple of years ago, we were experiencing a lot of staff turnover, and we were looking at the reasons why. And of course, pay was a big factor, and so I really appreciate your efforts to help us with that. A couple of years ago, you added extra money in the personnel contingency fund and gave us access to that so that we could start out folks at higher salaries to compensate them for their education and their experience and their skills. And that has really helped, but I think on the second part of that is we wanted to look at ways that we could support staff and address any type of worker morale issues in order to continue our retention efforts. And so I came to learn about Strump Associates, that is an organizational consulting firm, and they work with a lot of organizations and governments, and they'd actually done some work with a couple of other local departments of social services. And so I talked with those agencies, and with Albemarle Social Services, Strump Associates actually facilitated their process for coming up with the strategic plan and wrote it, and it was on their website. So I read that and talked with Lori Strump with Strump Associates and how she could help our agency. And so she gave me the proposal that I provided you all with a copy of. And so what that entails was two focus groups with staff. And the way that works is she would meet with two different groups of staff with no more than 12 in a group for 90 minutes each about just the organization of the agency, what's working, what's not working, what can we do better, what would you like to see from management. And so we had 16 employees participate in the focus groups. And as a result, Ms. Strump wrote a report based on the findings from those meetings, and then scheduled two meetings with our management staff. And at the first one, so the focus groups was on October 25th, and then she met with the management team in November and then again in December to come up with an action plan. And so we looked at the findings and the results of the reports and addressed some, identified some areas that we felt like that we could address. And we came up with an action plan which identified the issues that we could address, how we were going to address it, what we were going to do, who in particular was responsible for it, and a target date when that would be accomplished. And so then we met with staff December 21st and went over the action plan with all the staff. We shared the focus groups reports was shared with staff, and we shared the action plan with them. And part of what Ms. Strump said is with the way this works is if you have the focus groups and you get the report and then you don't do anything at all, that's worse than not even having the focus groups to begin with. So if you're going to have employees take the time to give their feedback, then it's very important that you come up with an action plan and show them that you take their concerns seriously and that you really are doing something about them. We also contracted part of this little package was that she facilitated a staff retreat off-site. We did that on January 10th. And that was very helpful because our office, when I started there many, many years ago, everyone who worked there had been there for many, many years, and it was more like family, and everyone knew each other. And right now, 45% of our staff have been there less than a year, 25% 1 to 2 years. So 70% of our staff has been there less than 2 years, and they're very new, and they're still learning their jobs. And so the staff retreat was really helpful in facilitating ways of communication among staff and different work styles and being able to identify those. So I feel like that was very helpful, and I've had a lot of really positive feedback from staff since then about the whole process of the focus groups and the staff retreat, and staff really, I think it really helped them feel more supported in the jobs that they do. So,
is your action plan, is the action plan in here?
No. I didn't include that.
Oh,
like,
I know,
if
I didn't.
You want it.
Yeah, I'd like to, yeah.
I can get that.
Yeah,
to you.
Okay. And you finished this up January 10th? Was this the end?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. The staff retreat was the last.
So you've been monitoring.
Yeah, and actually management team, our supervisory staff, met with Ms. Strump on Monday and sort of revisited the action plan just to see where we were. And she checks in with us to make sure that we're still abiding by it, and which we are.
That's good.
So, yeah, it was a really good process. And the good thing about Ms. Strump is she's worked with other social services, so she understands some of the unique sort of challenges we face having two divisions that do two completely different jobs. And then she understands the job descriptions and what everybody does. And
so, okay. So how did your Monday meeting go?
It went very well. And a lot of very good feedback since then from management staff. So we have a plan going forward.
Good. And are you having their staff lunch this month? Are we going to do that?
Yes. So, and the board, we have a great board, by the way. And they are going to be providing lunch for our staff on May 21st. To show appreciation. February is recognized as Benefits Specialist Appreciation Month, and March is Social Worker Appreciation Month, and April is Clerical Appreciation Month. And so our board in May has a luncheon for all the staff to appreciate them. So, and they're all very much looking forward to it, and Miss Eager's barbecue.
A lot of appreciation.
I've not once did I hear mean old gym teacher appreciation day.
No, I didn't hear that.
I've never heard that.
Someone once said, just do your darn job.
Yeah. Okay, Bob. That's my boy.
Next week is Teacher Appreciation Week. Oh. It came home in my son's folder.
Oh, it did? Hot dog.
You didn't know?
Maybe there's a lot of things like that. They kind of slip my mind every once in a while. Mr. Rothman,
nobody
be quiet.
You, don't think.
Communists appreciate everybody, just saying.
Oh, gosh, don't start that one. That was not a fun meeting.
Okay, now that we've gone there, thank you so very much, Ms. May, for that update.
Gives me heartburn. Did you hear what I said?
No, ma'am. I was trying to get right on by that one after that came out.
So y'all need to stop bringing it up because it gives me heartburn.
All right, TJPDC, Rural Long Range Transportation Program, Christian Zimmerman.
Good afternoon. I'm actually with Hudson. Christian Zimmerman.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's Christian Zimmerman.
No, he unfortunately couldn't make the meeting. I'm the Transportation Program Manager now for the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, and I wanted to kind of run through an update to the Rural Long Range Transportation Plan that we've been working on. And I have copies of the Fluvanna County recommendations that are being passed out. The document itself is a rather lengthy regional transportation planning document. These are the recommendations that are that have been identified for Fluvanna County at this point. The document is a regional transportation plan covering the rural areas of the Planning District Commission, which include Albemarle, well, the rural portions of Albemarle, the entirety of Fluvanna, Greene, Louisa, and Nelson counties. And this plan is an update of the 2035 rural long-range transportation plan that was completed about 5 years ago by the Virginia Department of Transportation and one of their consultants. This plan really focuses on providing a list of recommendations that counties can take action on through the various processes for funding transportation programs, mainly Smart Scale. The document provides recommendations in terms of some planning horizon, in terms of a short-term, mid-term, long-term recommendation. In addition, it also provides some information about a prioritization for projects based on some quantitative data available from the Virginia Department of Transportation, dealing mostly with safety in terms of where we're seeing trends associated with vehicle collisions. Things like pavement condition, they go out and they monitor the condition of the road surface, congestion, and truck traffic. The recommendations were developed with the assistance of Fluvanna County staff through the Rural Transportation Technical Committee that is housed at the Planning District. If there are questions about recommendations, I'll entertain those, but I just wanted to inform what the next steps are in our process. Being a regional plan, our commission will be reviewing the plan and making a formal motion to adopt it. Depending on what the individual county wants to do, some adopt the rural long-range transportation plan into their comprehensive plans as reference. Some adopt the recommendations from the plan directly into their comprehensive plans, but that's largely left up to the each locality that's covered by this document.
How does this fit in with VDOT's plan? We just had the six-year plan presented to us.
So this is for projects that are beyond the six-year plan time horizon. These are more long-range in nature. But it is developed with close coordination with VDOT and close coordination with the work that they do on their statewide transportation plan known as VTrans 2040, which is the current version of that document. So projects have been identified to how they meet specific needs associated with VTrans 2040, which is a requirement when it comes to the smart scale funding methodology, that those needs be listed. There is a full copy of the plan available on our website, and I can make sure that a link is provided if you would like to take a look at the document. It provides a lot of background information in terms of existing conditions of congestion and roadway and safety and things like that.
What does segment mean? What is that? What are these height indicators mean?
A segment is a portion of a roadway versus an intersection, which is a point.
Okay.
Segments are normally, they're designated in the VDOT data, normally represent kind of a logical length of roadway, maybe from one intersection to another intersection or similar dividing point.
Yes, I am.
And these long-range transportation plans tend to be living documents, especially as smart scale applications are made, projects are completed, lists are updated on a pretty regular basis as we work through the Transportation Technical Advisory Committee on that.
Okay, then we're back on page, this page, right? I don't know if page number not, but it says, Rank 1, Lands 2, then the DTRNS needs 2, Long-Term Reconstructable Roundabout. I have no idea what that's saying.
Sure. So what you're seeing is the number of lanes on the roadway. The VTrans needs, there's a key at the top of page 58, And VTRAN's needs are those statewide transportation plan needs that I alluded to. Mm-hmm. So two is addressing a safety need associated with VTRAN's. It could address corridors of statewide significance, which would be something on 64 or US 250. UDA would be a project that's in a defined urban development area meeting the particular required language in state code. And then a regional network, which only pertains to projects in Albemarle County.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I need a little OJT with that. I'm going to let you all handle it because I can't say that I totally understand.
Many of the intersections that we talked about are listed in the top numbers here.
That's all right. I don't have to. It'll come gradually. Yes. Thank you.
And this is something that we'll be continuing to work with county staff on.
Okay. All the counties.
Priorities and the shift. We get data at particular points in time, and we know that.
Right. Now, will things ever come back to us to make decisions? Any of this?
Well, when it filters down back into the six-year plan, it'll come back.
It'll come back. Okay, these this really filters down, right.
Regional long-range planning.
Okay.
We know that there's going to be a new river sometime there to start bridges, build bridges, 20 years from now.
Right.
It's much more long-term, but staff coordinates with them and coordinates with VDOT, but you get it when it's actually on a timeline that might require your action.
Okay.
So you work with VDOT to decide which roads, you help them decide which roads need to be addressed because they pay for the
money. Yeah, it's a collaborative process. We rely on them for all the data, and of course, they're the primary road builder in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So these documents help them meet their needs to identify lists of projects.
And was it your recommendation to put the rumble strips in? Those rumble strips that down the middle of the road, so if you go over into the next lane.
That was probably
traffic engineers.
That's traffic engineers, and that's probably something they do through their maintenance program. Mm-hmm. Just like you might start to see in some places, they now have the left turn arrows that flash yellow at intersections. That's something that they're doing as part of general safety.
I like those a lot better than I do just having a green circle.
Or the little sign that nobody can read. Oncoming traffic on green. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why I brought that up a couple times, putting it on our one stoplight.
Yeah.
And it's not like we're going to really put them in debt with the number of them they're going to have to put up. All righty. And so you just have some of the number. All of these are in our county.
Mm-hmm.
Just some of them aren't numbered here.
Yeah, some of the numbers, there's a few numbers that are missing. I have to talk with my colleague about why his map did not show those numbers. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that when I was looking through the packet.
Mm-hmm. One of them that we didn't talk about the other day is the one right here. Courthouse coming on to 15, that's number two. Mm-hmm. Anybody's ever pulled out there, especially now that they have a lot of folks with cars at the
shouldn't be a problem on a 35-mile-an-hour highway, but there's not going to be
fly
down that hill.
Oh,
well, you know what? Every once in a while, anybody that does that right now, well, they haven't been there consistently in a while, but for a while there, there wasn't very often you couldn't go by and see either a gray car or a white car sitting at the base of that hill saying, hey, buddy, come here.
Yeah, I've seen them pull over.
Pretty speedy coming down from down that hill.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you so very much. Any questions or comments from anyone? We very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
You, FY19 Budget and Health Insurance Update. Jessica Rice, HR Manager.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
So we thought we'd bring you some good news this afternoon.
Oh,
amen.
Presentation, right? apparently I have the mouse here. As you remember, when we were doing the budget, we were anticipating a very large healthcare cost increase for our staff. We actually worked into the budget. It was estimated to be 40% originally as far as an increase goes. Our last update that you are all aware of, I believe we were down to 30% after negotiations. And then late last week, we heard back from our broker, and we were able to talk Cigna down to only a 15% health care increase.
Isn't that something? Only a 15%.
Well, and we're thankful because the counties are honest. One is 19, one is 17, one is 15, and one is 20.5.
I didn't think you had much hope the last time we were here.
I didn't think so either.
And we're thankful for Pierce Group Benefits because they're the ones that have been driving this hard.
We've finished negotiating. There's no more negotiating. This is it.
I believe this is it. And
it's going to be 1.5 next time we get
to
it. It's definitely done. We're not going to pay more.
Okay.
So that's money we won't take out of that.
Yeah, we're gonna just to show you a little bit.
Or we can return the ops cuts that we put in.
Well, we have a whole list of things for you to come back.
Well, you can have it already spent, probably.
Right, no, you know. Is the first thing on the list.
Oh.
Just to kind of show you what happened during the process, that there was other pricing that was that was gathered at this point. We did look at Anthem Local Choice. We looked at going back to them. Like that, just another Anthem plan. Optima actually decided they were not going to quote us because they couldn't be competitive. And we do have this other version of Cigna. It's something that the schools are also looking into right now. And we have not received information from them as of yet. And so with the first of the fiscal year coming up and us needing to kind of start the open enrollment process, we kind of are thinking maybe that it's in everyone's best interest to move forward with the 15% number that we got. Did you
want to? Yeah. Okay. So, we're going to pass out this complicated sheet for you, but what I want you to understand is...
Say it ain't so.
Unfortunately, health insurance is not easy. Just, if you look at the first set of columns where it says current, that's the current rates. Under the red column, which is FY18 month, that's the monthly charge for each one of those plans for what we currently pay. The next red column is what the new rate is under the 15% increase. So you can see here it's $404 is what it currently costs for an HDHP employee only. That's D4. And then if you go over to the next red column, column I, it's going to cost $483. Okay? So those are the two columns we're referring to as we do calculations on this sheet. But the various options that are there allow you to see first the blue columns. That's under K, L, M, N, and O, where it says FY19 county covers increase, the blue lettering. So that's what you said in the budget, that the county was going to cover the increase. Well, if that's the case, then this is what the percentages would be paid in column L. So it shows 100% for the HDHP line, then 95%, then goes down to 89%. And if you go back over to the first yellow column, the first green column, that's column F. Mm-hmm. That's what the percentages you were paying before. You were paying 100% of it before. You were paying 95% of the next level and 87% of the next level. But to pick up the increase, here's what the new percentages will be. And those percentages go all the way down. You can compare column F to column L, the green column to the green column. And it shows that if you cover the increase, then you're now paying a higher percentage of the cost of that plan. And the total cost, The new total cost is $228,000 for that increase versus $435,000. So a $207,000 decrease, which is great. While that's what you've already said, and I'm not necessarily expecting you're going to change that, I wanted to make sure you're aware, if you look under the next set of columns where the red lettering is up top, where it says fiscal year 19 maintain county current percent. So the green column there, column R, that has the current percentage you pay for health insurance. That's essentially a split plan. If you pay 75% today, then you'd pay 75% of the increase. The counties with the employees would pay 25%. And you can see in the last column, that group, what the increase to an employee would be. this is something you're going to want to look at over time and in next budget season too, because you're going to have to, you're going to face this every year. What are you going to do next year when there's a 10%, not that it's going to happen, a 10% decrease in health insurance costs? Is the county going to keep the money, or is the money going to go back to the employees? And you've done it different ways every year. And I'm not expecting you're ever going to set a policy and stick to it, because the board's going to change every time. And if there's a big increase, some board members say, oh, we got to cover it. And some board members say, well, we should split the cost. And I can lay out any alternative you want, and there's basically one the same percentage, or setting a flat percentage. That's the purple set of columns, which says new fixed county percentage. So maybe you tell everybody we pay 100% of the HDHPs, but we pay 90, 85, 80, 70 of the other different plans. So just think about this. I'm assuming that you're not going to back up now and say that you're going to split this with the employees, because you already adopted a budget. So that's what that first set of columns are. And it's going to cost the county $228 versus $435, which is good.
Thank
now,
you.
The second issue with this is that dental's a little bit different. Currently, the county doesn't pay, that's the sheet with the blue top on it. Currently, the county doesn't pay for dental vision plans. The employee pays for the dental vision plans. Now, having said that, if you don't take our medical plan, the county pays 100% of your dental or vision plan. Because, let me put it this way, we pay $488 now for a single employee plan. If you don't take the medical, then we'll pay for your dental or vision, because that's vastly cheaper than the $488. It may only be, you know, $150 or $200 total, so we're saving a lot of money. But if you take medical, dental, and vision, because dental had a 9% increase, not the 15, but a 9% increase, I want you to go over to column U on the blue sheet. Column U is what the increase to an employee is going to be. So for instance, and on the screen you can see it's all yellow on the screen, but it's from $1 to $11 a month as a total increase. So the most an employee would have to pay new out of pocket, if they had a family comprehensive dental plan, they're going to pay $11 more a month. We don't have any simple way to split these out, because it's all based on what you contribute towards the health plan. And I know you said you wanted to cover the increase, but because we don't pay dental and vision, it's a little hard to do that. Now, again, I don't think $11 for a comprehensive dental family plan, that's $550 or more a payday, is too big a burden. But that means the county, the employees, pay about $7,000 over the course of the year, all the employees that participate. $7,000 more next year, the county pays $228,000 more for whatever increase there was. That's what that last column on there, column U, is. Because the total increase, 15% plus 9%, or 9%, is about $235,000 total, rather than the $435,000. But so I need direction from you. We could go with column O on the blue, or column U, but there's no simple way to do column O unless you increase the amount you're paying for medical. And then that means that some employees will get unequal benefits, because if you increase the amount you pay for medical, and I don't take dental, well, then I'm getting a better deal on medical. So I would leave dental and vision as they are, and there is no increase on the vision plan this year. Those are very inexpensive. I think an employee plan is like $4 a month. But the dental is a little bit more complicated, because there are additional benefits. And if you wanted to cover that $11, we'd have to go back to the previous sheet, the medical sheet, add that 11 into that number. But the 11 would go on if they take comprehensive dental. And what if they don't take any dental? Well, then you've added 11. We can't do it person by person. It's way too complicated. It's got to be one figure and be done. So I'm hoping that you will approve column U. In other words, the county eats the cost of the health insurance, medical insurance increase. The employees cover the cost of the dental increase if they take dental. There is no increase to the vision, and we have a motion set up that gives you those options in. So we've got that motion rule later on. In the meantime, I want Mr. Dahl to cover what you could potentially do with that 207, because it's in your budget now already.
Right.
So, Mr. Dahl.
Okay, so now that we have the 207, well, we had the 435 that was already docked in the budget, we're going to see a $207,000 savings in the current budget. So some of the options that we can do with that 207 is, one, we can come back to the board at a future time and we can reduce the budget by the $207,000. Like I said, we figured we're going to need this expense for the insurance, so since we now know that it's more or less guaranteed that we're going to see savings, we can reduce the budget, reduce the expenditures by $207,000, and we can reduce that amount with what we're using for fund balance for this current fiscal year. That's option number one. Option number two is we can just leave the expenditure authority there. The money just stays there in the fiscal year 19 budget. At the end of the fiscal year, if the board chooses not to use those funds for anything else, it goes directly back into fund balance. Option number three is, I know some discussions have been discussed before. Well, you know, what if we see insurance savings? Well, you know, maybe we're going to decrease or eliminate the operations cuts of the $128,000. And as we said, you know, some other options, you know, we can decrease the use of fund balance, we can restore FRA ops funding cut, we can restore CSA purchases of services. You know, the board can decide if they want to use that towards maybe some CIP items that were not funded in this budget. Or number four is any other options you have. Well, one caveat to this is, so for the operations cuts, within the operations cuts, within that 127 or 128,000 was also the same percentage cuts for nonprofits. So if the board says we don't want to use the 207 to decrease or eliminate the operations cuts, then we need to look at the nonprofits because, you know, for instance, in there, you know, you wanted to provide funding to Foothills. Well, we'd have to cut that. We'd have to cut funding to...
Well, you'd have to decide what
nonprofits you want to cut by the same percentage that county departments are going to get decreased as well. So that's kind of what we're talking about for the 207. It's not something that we have to, you know, have dead set right at this moment. You know, we can come back with a formal motion, but we would like to get the sense of the board for...
So we know what motion to prepare.
Yes.
Do you have any debt that would cover? Anything that's small?
We have no debt that we can pay off. Everything, all the debt that we've paid off, we paid off ahead of time. Everything.
I know you paid off, what, several?
Yeah, we paid off about $2 million in the early debt.
That wouldn't be useful on a $207,000 payoff.
All right. Why do you have to do anything now? That's what I would.
Well, you don't. You can just leave
trying to figure out how we're going to spend it. I wouldn't be worried about it. It's just money sitting there and take it over to the next year and then add another $100,000 and that's a penny right there. So
you can just leave it in the budget and we do nothing with it and it just sits there. The expenditure authority for $435,000 is there, but as we said, we're only going to use $228,000. So when fiscal year 19 ends, the money just goes back in the fund balance.
Sure. Remember, you've already had some constitutional officers say that they can't take that cut. Now, I'm not sure I've heard this ever too many times say no to a constitutional officer. So
wait till the end of the year and we'd find out.
Well, but for the 127, that's the case. I mean, if we say we're just going to leave the cuts, that's fine. We leave the cuts. All departments suck it up and they do the cuts. But in addition, we need to bring the nonprofit list back up to you, and the board needs to determine. I think it equates to either like 12 or 14,000. Out of that 12 or 14,000, what nonprofits are we going to cut?
I think it's 3,000.
No, it was like 12 or 14.
All right. I thought when we did the requested cuts, the ops cuts, we didn't hit that number.
We did. It was.
We put 127 in there and left 120.
82.
Right.
Correct. We just applied the percentage to get to 127 because that's what you included in the budget.
And the 82 was what the ones that said they could cut came up with 82.
Yes.
But the difference, so the difference would be 82 from the 127.6.
Yeah. So they, this is what people said when we sent the inquiry out. They responded with 82. We thought we would get closer to 110, but we just put the 127 applied equally to every department that we can legally make a cut on. You can't do on reassessment because that's a contract. Mm-hmm. But on all these other ones, we just put the same percentage, 2.3%, all the way down.
So it seems to me, make life simple. I respect that that each of the departments came in and did their best to say, here's what we can do. I think we should respect what they had, and I understand that we applied that cut from that standpoint, but we're talking about a differential of about $50,000, $45,000 there.
Yeah.
That we should leave in place the $87,000 of cuts that they put in, but not apply the $45,000 that were driven by a percentage, and then likewise that would be the case for the nonprofits. So I think that comes out to a total of $60,000, but still leaves another $140,000 or so that, we could either leave in the budget, return to the fund balance, whatever the case may be, but I think even in our budget process this year, there were a couple of question marks as to what was going to happen next. So my recommendation would be just to leave it in for the current year, as opposed to, stick it right into fund balance at this point in time.
When we went to them and said we're going to take 127,000, they came back to us and said we can give you 82.
Yeah, I know that. Okay. I understand that.
No, not all departments did, and some of it could be. Some departments came in higher than what they said because.
But the total wound up being 82,000 of the people, what they said they could give.
But we also went through their budgets and we looked at things, and there are some departments that didn't offer cuts that they could take cuts.
Mm-hmm. Well, we think.
Yeah.
We see the budget every year, but.
Yeah, and when someone say, you said someone is saying we can't take the cuts.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't tell me anything.
Well, they haven't streamlined us yet because you haven't gone hard to the wall. And if you say these cuts are in place and we send it off to them, said your budget is cut by this amount and here's the dollar value, you will have people either come to you now, front door, back door, or at the end of the year, or some will just accommodate it and work it. I mean, some of us are going to cut our training budget. Some of us are going to cut extra things we do. And it's not.
Is it detriment? Are they cutting something that really detriment?
Budgets are tight already. It is detrimental to a good, efficient operation because, again, if I thought there was fluff in the department operations budget, I'd be going after it and telling you about it and talking to those department heads or those conference officers. They have all worked really hard to make their budgets lean and mean.
But apparently you think there's a little bit of fluff in there.
We're saying there's things that you would have to.
We'll make cuts. I'm going to cut training. I'm going to cut going to a conference. I'm going to cut mileage on cars. I mean, we'll show you where the cuts are. For instance, in the county administrator's budget or the BOS budget, I'll show you exactly what lines I would cut. It doesn't mean I like doing it. And some other department heads or constitutional officers say they can't because it's as tight as it can be. I've got to do this mandated training because it's certification requirements or whatever.
I think I remember social services saying that if we cut them, theirs is matched money. So if we cut them from our budget, then we lose money from another.
You don't want to cut that, obviously.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. But that's one of the ones that's in the $127,000, I believe.
Correct. Can you imagine cutting that much?
That's $4,000. So
what they said is they would cut the children's fair, which is up there, which is, I think, if I remember correctly, was county funded anyway.
Right.
That's what they pay. But county not when it's matched. You're not going to cut that.
Right. $6,500 the county funded for that.
And that's where they offered to.
For the children's fair, the only thing in operation.
Right. Yep. It doesn't have some match.
Right.
Right.
I mean, so,
but
so
yeah,
I have to keep it.
Everybody's got a story like that about part of their budget. We put in 2% or 2.3% for emergency management. That's $24,000.
Out of the emergency management budget, there's no way because the UVA.
The vast majority of this, of the emergency management budget, is just Debbie's salary and the contract. I mean, there's just not much in there you can cut. I mean, we can cut, take the postal services, instead of $50, take it down to $48.
Well, what if we had a, we could negotiate a different...
in the process of...
MI services?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but that doesn't affect this budget now. You already adopted a budget. I mean, you're going to find out in a few weeks what we got. Six proposals?
Yeah.
Six amateur proposals, and the numbers go, wait, can I say the numbers now? Just the range?
Just the range.
Okay,
yeah.
The range go from $430,000 to $715,000.
That's on what?
On for ambulance
service. For ambulance service.
Uh-huh.
438 to 715. We currently pay just about $600,000 a year. So there's not any huge savings there, one or the other, but it's not going to go into effect until that contract goes into effect. And when does that start? When we say, right?
Yeah.
So,
and what is it now?
About $600,000 is what we pay UVA.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But again, we've got an evaluation team. We have to evaluate those contracts and take a look and see if they're responsive. So I don't know if the 430 one's going to be responsive, and I'm not sure if the 715 is going to be responsive, but all the rest of them are in between that range. But that's really a future budgetary item rather than go backwards and make it up. And frankly, if we could save some money, be great to put back in the fund.
And in addition to those, if the board decides they don't want to reinstate or eliminate the department cuts, like I said, nonprofit cuts are in there. We have to get nonprofit letters out to the nonprofit so they know what their budget's going to be for the year or what they're going to be receiving from the county. So whether it's tonight or the next meeting or
they wanted it yesterday, but well, yeah, the nonprofits, because they're trying to build their budgets too. So for instance, on the nonprofits, you funded $615,000, but that included a couple of new things that you hadn't done before, the Foothills and Hospice of the Piedmont. And those are new this year. The cut we've got is $14,000, would be 2.3% of the 127. So we want to know where you want to apply that if you're going to go ahead and go forward with that. And if you want just a salami slice, 2% on everybody, we can just do 2% on everybody, but you can't, because some of them are contractual. We have a specific agreement with that organization to pay 50 cents per capita. So I can't cut that one, so now I'm going to apply more cuts to somebody else.
So you said you need to cut that 2.3%?
Well, this $127,000 includes $14,000 out of nonprofit agencies.
Oh, from them?
Yes.
Yep. From that list, so we would have to. So the board would have to.
Here, Board of Zoning Appeals.
We had to put some money in fund balance.
I didn't realize that it was.
That was resolved now, and then we can talk about it later, later date when we can see what they are.
Well,
then we'll know what the figures are.
Well, we have to determine what some of the figures are up front, because we have to give the numbers to the nonprofits specifically, and they're included in that 127.
The departments, when we give
just
them
leave it where it is.
We'll just put a line there and says, here's what your cut is.
We came up with a lump sum of 127, and out of that 127, 14,000 is for nonprofits.
No.
So that's part
finance needs to know how to apply that 14,000.
So if we go back to my original statement, subtract the fact of the nonprofits because it's already included in there, right? So you're really talking about restoring $45,000. Really talking about using $45,000 and restoring the balance to the fund balance.
What's your choice?
$12,000 for the nonprofit.
$58,000. Yeah,
is
right there.
$13,000.
But the difference between $127,000 and $87,000 is.
It's $127,000 to $70,000.
Out of the nonprofits.
Yes. Right.
Not voluntarily, you just applied a 2% cut there.
Well, it wasn't just straight 2, but we pulled it off some of your new stuff and a few other areas. But some nonprofits are contractual on the number.
What's your choices back up? You had three choices and the other.
If you
reduce the number one, number two, number three.
one and two are kind of the same.
Number
three, I don't think that we didn't go back and cut an additional 62,000. I don't believe that was what we didn't fund. That's what we didn't fund in the beginning.
You can restore that.
That's what we didn't fund in the beginning. Our original budget had it at 62,000.
Right. Like I said, number one is reduce it now, and we have the fund balance. It shows our fund balance higher right at this moment. Two is just leave it there, and at this point, 19, it goes back to fund balance. And then three is, you know.
I think that.
Three is a list of salami slice choices that you can figure out if you want to do it or not do.
I would go for one or two.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I would go for one with the restoration of the $58,000.
I agree with Mr. O'Brien on that, but we got three saying 207 goes back into. But now we got to tell them where are you going to take the nonprofit money from.
You have to cut.
So the nonprofit's cut would be 14,148. So you just have to figure out.
You know,
14,000 out of
600.
Yeah, it's not that big deal.
It's not that much.
It's not that much. Put the money back into the fund balance. And then let's watch.
We've already agreed we're going to put it back into the fund balance. We just got to tell them where we're going to take the $14,000 from.
The TGM's EMS Council is a contractual number. The Legal Aid Justice Center is not, so you can pull some off there. I'll just mark them as we go.
Just mark the ones that are contractual that we cannot take anything from. Everything else, take 2%.
Scottsville Fire and Scottsville Rescue. What's that? What are we doing there?
We paid them to cover the
Mr. Weaver. Scottsville Fire used to be funded out of here, but it's funded out of the fire and rescue budget.
Yeah, you funded out. I forgot that. I remember you telling me that.
Region 10 is not 100% contractual, but it's. Part of the money is.
Why don't we just instead of doing $207,000, do $193,000 and leave the $12,000 in for the nonprofits, and that way we don't have to go through this process. It's pretty much chump change to begin with, from that standpoint. And the dollars that we get back from the actions of nonprofits usually pay themselves back at a ratio of 3 to 10, as much as that in terms of the real dollar impact that they have in our community. So it seems to me that we're kind of being foolish, jerking a lot of people around to save $12,000.
I won't even say jerking people around, but it's just, this is going to be a time-consuming process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, instead of putting 207 back in fund balance and reducing the budget, your proposal would be 193 because we'd make up this 14.
And just taking that 14 and giving the 14 back. But even if we take the 14, I could live with just taking what we can take it from and just dividing it equally, equitably.
Well, yeah. I'll make a motion for that.
Moselle, didn't we decide on one or two or not?
Y'all decided on one. We decided on one.
One or two.
Uh-huh. We decided on number one.
We will come back to you on your May 16th meeting with a list of proposed cuts to your nonprofits
right.
in your package.
All right.
So you can then vote that night. Because the
14,000 is
awesome.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Alrighty,
move on.
So we'll have a motion to put this back in to reduce your budget and to specify the nonprofit numbers next time.
Well, if we find another 100, we can reduce the 1 cent on the real estate too.
We can reduce 1 cent on the real estate, but we also pulled out the 3,000, which is now
going to just go back into fund balance.
How much were we pulling out?
Of? Spend it.
How much were we, hey, Mr. Dahl, how much were we pulling out of the fund balance to balance the budget?
It was like 406 or 408.
All right, so now we're under 200,000 that we're pulling out.
Yep. Like I said, so just to clarify, so we're gonna leave the 127. Well, we're gonna leave the 127 less the cuts to the nonprofit.
404 is what you're using on fund balance.
No, we're
okay, so we're now down to 197.
We're just trying to do it on the nonprofit side. Yeah.
They will be interested at the end of the year to see how much the people are bleeding at the end of the year. People said they couldn't.
If they're having issues, then they will come back to us and say, "Here's our issue, and here's what we need to fix it."
There you go.
$12,000.
But I honestly
we'll deal with
think that that's the wrong approach. When it, I mean, you know, County services are county services. I'm not saying that they don't deliver a lot of value. Of course they do. But, you know, the nonprofits leverage fundraising. They leverage volunteers. They do these other things that, you know, make that cost really very nominal. And so I, my opinion to say that, let's see how much we can, how much they'll be bleeding is really...
Well, I don't think they're referring, I don't think she's referring to the nonprofit. I think she's referring to...
Why are we not, why are we even discussing the $14,000 for nonprofits, in my opinion?
Because the three people nodded their heads and told us we were going
to
put 207...
I know, I'm trying to convince one person to change their mind.
Well, it's too late. All right, thank you, Mr. Dahl.
Well, there's already people in the audience that are planning on what they're going to come back and say.
I absolutely see one young man in the back going and smile at me. So, we'll now move forward with the consent agenda. V, minutes of April 4th, 2018. W, minutes of April 11th, 2018. XYZ, staff project bonus, Harris, Mr. Nichols. A, temporary staff compensation for additional duties, Paino. B, temporary staff compensation for additional duties, Payne. C, staff performance raise, Mr. Dahl. D, eConnect direct user agreement, Mr. Dahl. Do I have anyone back? Yes, I do. E911 radio project, radio communication system use memorandum of agreement with Lake Monticello Owners Association, Lake Monticello Police Department, Ms. Stoller. F, Train U.S. Incorporated energy performance contract addendum 1, Ms. Stoller. And G, FY19 CSA provider agreement, Mr. Moeller.
I'd like to talk about A and B.
A and B. Let's start with A first. So we'll talk about temporary staff compensation for additional duties. Mr. Spitzer.
A and B.
She wanted to pull A and B. Mr. Spitzer. That would be you, sir. For Ms. Paino. Is this part of the thing that we talked about? Okay.
We got...
Go ahead. So... For Ms. Paino, I've had a staff member put in his resignation. He left on April
13th. What was his job?
Athletics. He did our athletics. And I needed somebody to help me fill some of his shoes. And while he, while I'm trying to hire somebody, she took over some additional duties. It appears she gave me her 2 weeks notice a week ago. So her last day is actually Friday.
Well, that, these are all young people out of college.
Yeah.
So,
it's time right. for them to move.
So she is leaving Friday. So and that's why, again, and I did Melinda's. So I think it was B, Tad B. We, I have to fill some spots. You know, I need help paying people and stuff like that, and Melinda can help with that. So I'd like to give her compensation for the help I need until I hire.
So Ms. Paino's leaving?
She yes. is leaving, yes.
Okay, so then why are we...
She helped me for 2 weeks.
Until she leaves, she's taking on extra duties.
She is taking over extra duties.
Yeah, this, it'll stop the second she leaves, and the second a new person's hired, it'll stop.
This is when this was put in, I did extra work. Yeah, actually, she's
doing
extra
work. Process of doing
it. She's taking over some of the athletics jobs while she's here.
Mr. Weaver?
Not for work she's already done.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say something.
Yeah. Well, it's retroactive, so it's a little bit, she's been taking on extra duties. You can disapprove, but what you normally do is when we have a vacancy and someone has to take on their duties too, we don't give them the other person's salary. We give them a small bump up to take on additional duties during that period of time because somebody's got to do the work.
This is different. I mean, the government work is different than the workplace. Because when I was working on doing commodities, we needed somebody to come in early. And my boss was going to hire somebody. And I said, hey, I'll be here by 7 every morning if you give me an extra $100 a week. And he said, done. That's great. Because he didn't have to deal with another personality. He didn't have to pay more benefits. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe the county needs to look at if people who are willing to work harder and take over a position that you might want to hire somebody for. I don't see a problem with that. That's the way it is in the other
That's what he's doing right now.
He's
going
to hire somebody.
No. He's in the process of hiring someone, man.
You haven't heard the whole story yet. You'll get that in closed session. Let me tell you briefly.
There are three people leaving Parks and Rec. Okay?
Four.
Uh-huh.
She's saying
There are three people leaving Parks and Rec. That creates some dominoes. So one person is getting promoted to take that job because the other person left. So a part-timer is going to take the full-time job. Another part-timer is going to take another full-time job because that person left. You've got vacancies still during that period of time that are not filled. We're hiring a person to replace the person that left. In the meantime, while that person is going to be refilled, we need to do that work. We still have to have the athletic programs. We still have to do the, we still have to process things. So someone's getting paid a little extra to take on the extra work.
I understand that, but why do you have to hire extra people?
We are not hiring
people. Eventually.
No, ma'am.
No.
We have, he just replaced them. He has four full-time people. Okay.
You've already replaced them.
No.
No.
None of them have been replaced, except now he just did two internal hires. He's got Payne, Pace, Piano, and Jones. Those are four full-time people he's got. Three of them are leaving. Two of them are gone already. One's leaving next Friday.
This Friday.
This Friday.
The fourth.
Okay. So you've got three vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
So Melinda, who's over here still left, is Lee's going to give her, asking to give her some extra money, just like you got from your boss, to cover some of their duties until those positions are filled.
But see, that's what I'm trying to say. Have somebody in your office that's willing to work harder to take over the job.
Yeah, but they're full-time
position. Not refill this position?
Yes.
Oh,
there's no way.
You can't do that. You're talking about a 40 and a 40. Oh. You're not talking about an extra hour. You're talking about an extra 40 hours a week, which by law they'd have to pay time and a half, which would be far more expensive than hiring the other person.
Vastly more expensive, but there's no way.
No way. Things don't work that way.
What
year ago when you did that?
In the 60s? But that's what you got to tell us to do. Because if you don't want the leagues that they do, if you don't want the basketball leagues, if you don't want the senior center services with the senior tour, because the senior person just left, if you don't want those senior centers managed, then tell us. And we'll cut those, and we won't have to refill those positions. But all we're doing is refilling existing positions.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
And I understand what you're saying about trying to find somebody extra. But the problem is he only has three people right now working in a five-person office.
So you have five employees?
I have.
Oh, counting four himself.
Plus myself.
Five counting himself.
And so I've taken over. One left?
I have me and Melinda, but we're rehiring some. But right now for the athletics job, I'm taking over some, and Allison's taking over some. When she leaves, Melinda will get some of that, and I'm still taking over basically the county fair that the athletics job has. So I'm asking for help to pay our instructors and stuff like that, so I don't have to keep up with that. That's what I'm asking Melinda to do, until we can find somebody to get the job to start doing it themselves.
Okay, well, if you've only got you and one other person, you have to hire somebody. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, we're hiring people.
We will never come to you asking for new positions without explaining the new position. This is just refilling exactly what we've got. For instance, when the building official is on emergency medical leave for 3 months, who's going to do the house inspections unless you pay somebody extra to take on the extra work and work longer hours or do extra things?
And
otherwise stop the services.
And right now, the money that we will be paying out extra,
you're saving
we're
money.
Saving because yeah.
Positions
are vacant.
That's what it would
be. But they're not going to be for
long. Right, but when they become filled, then we'll stop paying the extra money.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, and Ms. Eager, your point is well taken. If finance five people total and they have a vacancy, the first thing we do when we have a vacancy is figure out, is it time to realign? Is it time to change? Is it time to modify? I'll be talking with you in closed session about one. Because that's the time when you've got a vacant position, you're not affecting the human body. In this case, we looked at it too. To continue his existing programs that you funded in the budget, he needs five people, him and the four others. All we're doing is backfilling. But in the meantime, while we're empty, people have to take on some extra work. That's what we're asking them to do. That's just like your boss did with you, take on extra.
He actually didn't hire somebody.
Oh, well.
I took over.
We don't have the ability to do that unless you tell us to stop.
We'll do that in the 21st century. Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions from the consent agenda?
Even 150. We have to do the motion. We don't have to do the motion with that.
No, no. Is there anything else that needs to be pulled on the consent agenda? Okay, nothing else? Hearing none? Do we have a motion?
I move we approve the consent agenda. You got to leave to list them all out?
No, just as
he's
presented.
He's already gone.
I've already done.
As presented, yeah.
Second.
We got a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right. Is there any unfinished business? All right, let's look at the new business then. Sheriff's Office SRO grant request, Captain Hill.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Coming to you this afternoon to talk to you and request for you, from you the opportunity to apply for a grant in our schools through the Sheriff's Office. The grant that we're requesting is for a full-time position. This full-time position would augment and be placed in the elementary schools. Excuse me. This position works directly with the elementary school principal. The idea in mind, of course, is to promote safety and security in the schools so that we can continue to have an environment where children can learn in. As you know, we have two existing positions of SROs. Currently, our SROs are placed in the high school and middle schools in Flunetta County. Our elementary schools are being supplemented by those two SROs, and now in a great detail. There's more and more requests for those services in the elementary schools. And currently we're doing a drug abuse resistance education program, substance abuse program in the elementary school. And that's taking away also from those officers in the other schools. Presently, the idea in mind would be to come up with this new position. This new position would be able to take over all of the elementary school work. The SROs aren't traditional law enforcement officers in the sense that they're responding to calls in a more proactive role. While they are law enforcement officers, they're law-related educators, and they're in the classrooms, they're in the hallways, they're on the bus ramp, they're in parents' and students' homes, and in the community. And so school law enforcement partnerships are better suited to be explained as community policing programs, and this is a community policing program. So the Department of Criminal Justice Services is offering an incentive block grant. This grant is available for 48 months with an annual application for renewal of funding. The funding that they are offering is up to $50,000 per year over the 48 months. Of course, this grant requires match funds of local dollars. The Sheriff's Office has been working with the school in this partnership to find the money to be able to fund the position that we're hoping to seek through the grant. And we're hoping that we can get your concurrence to apply for the grant. The reason for the late application at this point is because this is a rush deadline. Right now, the grant deadline for submission is May 11th. And we wouldn't be able to get this in without coming to you now to get this allocated. Just to kind of push the point or prove the point that is with regard to how impactful these programs are, I'd like to share with you an email I got from one of the administrators in the school. As a matter of fact, just last night she sent this to me. And I thought it certainly proves the point of the productivity and the need for these types of programs in Fluvanna and as they are all across our country. She said, Captain Hill, good evening, sir. I'd like to take a moment to share with you my appreciation for the incredible work your team has done this year to keep our schools safe and secure. Your professionalism, wisdom, and expertise are huge assets to our division as we endeavor to educate children. Specifically, I would like to share with you how I appreciate the professional and calm demeanor of both SRO Step and SRO Kozan when faced with highly agitated students in challenging situations. Officer Step, when Officer Kozan was out, was instrumental in supporting two young men, leveling with them over their dangerous behavior patterns. Officer Kozan is dubbed our child whisperer at Pluviana Middle School. If we can't de-escalate, sure enough, every time she's got our back. Your team goes above and beyond and is respectful to children to problem solve and quickly de-escalate. This illustrates just my point that the need for this type of service is paramount in Pluviana County, where we are constantly seeing more and more law enforcement engagement with dangerous behavior on school campuses. And we even see some of that same behavior here in Pluviana County. I'm sure you've looked at the Pluviana Review, you've listened to the news, and you hear some of the things that are going around our country. And we don't want that kind of stuff happening around us. But it's inevitable that we'll have to deal with some of this kind of risky behavior and at-risk populations. It's certainly better suited that we prepare for it now and use these types of programs to help mitigate the fallout when we have a problem in our community. So I ask if you would support us, support the Sheriff's Office, support Pluviana County Public Schools, Mr. Don Stribling here this evening, as we've been talking about this collaboration, and being able to fund us applying for a grant that we hope to get so that we can build a more supportive environment where children can continue to flourish and learn. Do you have any questions?
The 48 months, is that how they work? 10 months, 11 months?
11 months.
11.
10 months.
They work 10 months.
Yeah, they work 10 months in our school. Out of those 10 months that they work in the school, mm-hmm. two of those months they're working in the community with at-risk populations.
Okay.
So the funding is for 12 months, but the school dedication for each of these officers is 10 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. There's 2 months out of the year that we have to train them, get them their sustainment training, mm-hmm. Try and get them some new or specialized training because they're dealing with an at-risk population. We're dealing with children that are faced with traumas on a daily basis, and our officers have to go in and intervene. We have children that are suffering some type of mental illness or instability, and our officers are intervening. Or with families or parents who have those very same issues, and our officers are intervening. Over the last couple of weeks, maybe even the last month, you've heard of two instances where officers were able to quickly mitigate threats that have occurred in our community. And it came from this population. They were able to happen quickly because we have officers who are embedded in the school, who know the children, mm-hmm. who can link with the staff, and quickly resolve these types of things before they become things that we read in headlines, as opposed to the awarenesses that we get in our newspapers.
Now, did they work on the streets also some during those 2 months that they're off? Will they work as road deputies?
Of course, they're law enforcement officers, and if the community has an emergency need for them, that they're available. They're an available resource for an emergency need.
Where is the DARE program taught?
Currently, the DARE program has been deployed this year at the Carisbrook Elementary School. This week, they will conclude teaching the program this year, and we'll have a little celebration for them on Friday at Carisbrook School.
Is that for every third and fourth grade?
For every fourth grader is the core program, where the core program is being taught. But now, both of our SROs that we currently have been certified to teach this program in the junior high school, our middle school, and a senior high program at our high school. To have full deployment of that program, they would have to cross all of those schools to do that. They also teach another program that's called Virginia Rules, which is a law program. Mm-hmm. They teach criminal law to high school, middle school, and elementary school students in Virginia, specifically about Virginia law. And so along with that and their involvement with our other programs in the Sheriff's Office and in the community, they're invaluable to us. We really need to have more of what they can do with the population that we're looking at doing it with.
You haven't said what our share is going to be. I noticed that it said it will be the composite index.
Correct.
That we have to pay. What does that amount to?
So currently, what I've been able to come up with is about $15,620. We pay...
4 years?
No, per year.
Okay.
Per year. Of course, our deputies, we figure around about $40,000 a year is about what the deputy salary, is contributed to deputy salary in just salary. The composite index for Fluvanna County is 0.3912, which is a kind of high.
It's gone up,
which makes our cost to pay a little bit higher than maybe one of our surrounding jurisdictions. But again, I think this is something that's certainly necessary, and I think it's a high value to Fluvanna County.
I think it's a pretty good deal to be able to get a deputy if we can get a grant with a match fund for $15,000.
Well, what concerns me, what happens sometimes too, though, is
that we started.
It's for 4 years.
It is for 4 years.
And then you say that it will continue on, but a lot of times it's dropped at the end of that stated period sometimes in past grants.
Right, as funds are available. That's correct.
So you're going to drop it in 4 years?
It is not the sheriff's office's intent to take resources away from the citizens of this county. It is our intent to preserve this community as much as we possibly can. It makes this community marketable. It keeps the consumers of our services in this community safe. And they want to invest in our community when we're able to do the things that we're talking about doing right now.
Man, you're smooth.
Yes.
You're right.
What district are you in?
Well, that note, too, is from Mrs. Hill.
Good job.
Any other questions for Officer Hill? Excuse me, Captain.
Thank you.
Captain.
Thank you.
Oh, Captain, my Captain. All righty.
Nope.
No other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the application for School Resource Officer Security Office, School Security Officer Grant Program administered by the Department of Criminal Justice Services.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
And the FY19 health insurance plan. We've already done that.
You have to actually approve it now.
We got to do the motion.
So, based on... Oh,
wrong one. Mr. Striblin, please don't leave.
So, as I mentioned before, I've got two parts of the motion in here. One for the medical insurance and one for the dental insurance premium increases. Mm-hmm. So, if you go as you said before, you would say that the FY19 with the county covering the proposed medical insurance premium increases and the employees covering the proposed dental insurance premium increases as presented. So you'd say employee first, I mean county first, employee in the second part, if that's the rule of the board. And there's all the information we just talked about, the 15% increase, the 9% increase for dental insurance, nothing on vision, no changes to the plan, still the four tiers, still have all the options available for employees. County, remember, pays the full part of dental and vision if they don't take the medical insurance.
I wouldn't mind seeing it be the whole thing, but I'm just one person.
Well, I think that's what they recommended.
No, he's recommended that the employee covers the increase. Dental side.
Again, some of those increases are $1, some are $3, some are $5 per month. Right. The highest is $11 a month.
Like I said, I'm just one person of the five.
Are you ready for a motion?
Absolutely.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve renewal of the Cigna Health Insurance plan for FY19, with the county covering the proposed medical insurance premium increases and the employee covering the proposed dental insurance premium increases as presented.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Motion is made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
And chair votes nay. Motion passes 3-2. That's all right. So there, we're done there. Well, here we go. We will now move to our second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Anyone wishing to address the board at this time? Mr. Rothamel?
I'm going to do the
By the way, he's about to have a baby in the next week and a half or so.
15th.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. I just wanted to let Brian Rothmel, I don't live in the county.
That's right.
But just want to let you know that Bob Mr. Allenbrook graduated from rehab for his heart condition. 36 good old exercise sessions. And he celebrated by going to his favorite restaurant titled Grumpy's.
Thank you for the update, Mr. Rothmel.
He has a plate special.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time?
Come on, Kelly.
Instead of BYOB, it's DYD. DYD. DYDJ.
Mr. Chair, I move the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia for the purposes of discussing personnel, real estate, prospective industry, investment of funds, and litigation matters. Legal and litigation.
Exactly. I forgot. What was the code of litigation?
Litigation is Section
2.2-3711A7. All right. We have a motion by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
So you have a slide over. He left to go to fire.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors again convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only such public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Okay, we have a second. I mean, do we second that motion?
Yeah, you got a second there. Okay. Mr. Weaver seconded.
We have a second. We have a motion by Ms. O'Brien, second by Ms. Weaver.
Aye.
Chair, aye.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move that we adjourn this meeting to reconvene again on May 16th at 6 o'clock.
All right, do we have a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.